Power up fall projects with Ego at Lowe's. Every tool delivers power beyond belief. So whether it's leaves, limbs, or lawn cleanup, count on Ego to deliver the power, performance, and innovation you need. And now for a limited time, save up to $60 on select blowers, chainsaws, and pole saws. Shop Ego today at Lowe's. Offers valid through 10-1 while supplies last. Selection varies by location.
Welcome back to the Bonfire Podcast, where we talk about the UFC and mixed martial arts with those closest to the fight game. I am your host, MMA Junkie senior reporter and longtime MMA journalist, Mike Bond. Hope everyone out there is doing well. It is a pay-per-view fight week, UFC 315, coming up on Saturday in Montreal. If you're watching the video version of the pod, you can see me rocking my Canada jersey here. NHL playoffs going on, UFC 315 Canada very much in the spotlight on this week, and we have a great show coming up for you to discuss it. It will be the debut appearance of former UFC fighter, former Invicta FC champion, Michelle Waterson Gomez, who has done great things in the almost year since her retirement from mixed martial arts. You've seen her work on the desk as an analyst a few times of late. If you are on Netflix, you probably saw in that number one slot that movie Havoc with Tom Hardy and Michelle Waterson, making her big time acting debut in that movie. I thought she did a great job. We will talk about it all from UFC Des Moines this past weekend. Bo Nickel suffering, in the minds of some, a shocking loss, at least his first loss, and coming in a fight against Rainier DeRitter, who looked absolutely exceptional. A great game plan, doing everything that he said he was going to do when we spoke pre-fight. Just a relentless performance, and definitely the big MMA storyline of the weekend in my mind was the result of that fight. But of course, in the main event in Des Moines, we had Corey Sandhagen pick up a big win over Davison Figueiredo, an injury TKO, whatever you want to call it. Sandhagen was intentional with that technique in my mind. Nothing taken off this win by any stretch. I thought it was a great victory and great night for Corey Sandhagen, and leads into a very interesting time in the bantamweight division. But coming up at UFC 315, of course, will be the welterweight title in the spotlight. Bilal Muhammad defending against Jack Della Maddalena there at the Bell Center. I will be there. And in the co-main event, we have Valentina Shevchenko and Manon Fiorot for the women's flyweight title. So some interesting stuff going on in Montreal, in my opinion. Maybe not the most stacked card in the world, but I think that main card is pretty solid. There's 6-7 good fights on there. And I think for a UFC pay-per-view, that's probably the most you can ask for these days. So sit back, relax. Please make sure to like, subscribe, follow, rate, whatever you do on whichever platform you are consuming this on, audio or video. All the support means a lot. I will take a quick break and be right back with Michelle Waterson Gomez. Former UFC fighter, UFC analyst, actress extraordinaire now, Michelle. Seems like things are going great.
Yeah, you know, I can't complain. I'm very blessed, and I am just kind of rolling with the punches. It's a new chapter, lots of things going on. I'm actually more busy now than I was when I was fighting, in a different way, right? When you're fighting, you're zeroed in, you're training 3-4 times a day, and you have a singular goal. Now it's just kind of full steam ahead with 20 things all at once.
Yeah, I mean, it's coming up on the 1-year anniversary since the retirement. It goes by quick, I'm sure, but like this past, you know, 10 months to a year, how you envisioned it, has it gone better, as you kind of said there? What was kind of your expectations before retirement life and now that you've experienced it?
You know, again, it's just like anything else in life. It's just like a fight. You have your ups and you have your downs, and you kind of have to roll with the punches. And anybody that tells you, you know, turning the page is easy as long as you apply whatever, it's easier said than done, you know, it's just like fighting. So, you know, I dedicated 18 years of my life to being a professional athlete, and now I have to switch gears and understand, you know, how to apply the discipline I had physically to, you know, mental discipline and to a different type of hustle. So yeah, it's, like I said, I'm blessed and we're doing a lot of things, but right now it's all me having to prove myself all over again in these different arenas.
Yeah, and we'll get into those. I had Dean Thomas on the podcast last week, and we were talking about Anthony Smith's retirement a little bit. And he said, like, his biggest piece of advice, Dean, that he can give a retiring fighter is, like, stay out of the gym for 3 to 6 months, like, after you hang
stay up. Stay out?
Yeah, stay out of the gym. Did you do that at all, or, like, were you still training pretty often?
I have a jiu-jitsu school here in Albuquerque, and so, you know, we're staying in the gym in a different capacity as a coach. Sure. But I do understand what he says, because it pulls you, you know, every, you know, even now watching the fights, having to call a fight where I've fought both of these girls, it kind of gets my blood boiling, and it makes me want to jump back in there, especially, like, you know, hearing them on the mic and stuff. And it's just like, ah, I want to get back in there. But I understand what he means, because, you know, once an athlete, always an athlete, and it's hard to separate yourself from that. And it's very easy to fall back into wanting to get into that routine, because it's what you're used to.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The jiu-jitsu school, is that mostly like youth jiu-jitsu, or is that all ages, or what's it mostly centered
on? All ages. Yeah. A traditional jiu-jitsu school with my Professor Barata. It's great. You know, we have a great kids program. We have a great adults program, traveling, competing. I teach the tiny tots, which is like the 3 to 5 year olds. And then I also teach the older kids. And the big kids.
Does anyone from your karate roots give you shit for opening the jiu-jitsu school and not the karate school?
No. You know, it's been so long since I've done any traditional karate. I've evolved so much, and so I think I would it wouldn't make as much sense to me to open a karate school, because it's just something that I'm not as familiar with anymore.
Sure. When you retire, people are like, Michelle's going to pop up in karate combat one day. Like, it's too easy. Does any of that stuff interest you, or is like the competition fully done?
Well, 100%. You know, it tugs at me all the time. And it's funny, because I was doing some, you know, cage side commentary for karate combat. And it's a really cool skill set or rule set, and it matches my skill set perfectly. And I remember kind of just being in the back with Boss Rutan, and him just kind of nudging me like, hey, this will be perfect for you.
Yeah, you never know when opportunities may come along. I mean, did the GFL thing ever come across your desk? I mean, it's always probably kind of a little bit worrisome seeing all these big new leagues pop up, and there seemed like there's a lot of promises there. I know Holly was involved, but it seems like now it's completely disintegrated.
Yeah, you know, I mean, it is nice to have different promotions pop up. It gives the fighters a little bit more opportunity to use, you know, their leverage, or to give them leverage. But no, like I said, as far as MMA goes, like, for me, UFC is the top of the top. And if I were to ever go back, it would be with the UFC. But just being out of it and hearing, it's funny, because when you're in it, you don't listen to what everybody else says.
Right.
And when you're out of it, especially as, you know, as an analyst, that's what we do, is right. We talk. And so just hearing the repetitive story of what it is to be a fighter after 36, after 37. And it's just like mind boggling to me, because I'm like, are you kidding me? Like, we're still young. We're still in our prime. And that's just me as an athlete. That's just me, you know, thinking about, you know, how I felt at 38. I still felt like I could, you know, compete with the best of them. And so it is disheartening. But you know, if I was to get back into it, it would be with the UFC. But honestly, you know, thinking about it, you know, I've fought for 18 years professionally. And when I first started fighting, there wasn't a space for females in the UFC. And already halfway through my career is when they opened up that space for the UFC. So I am really blessed to still be able to have had the opportunity to still be in somewhat of my prime while I got to fight for the UFC. You know, hopefully down the future, they open up more weight classes for the girls. I think I would have had a different story if they were had like an atom weight division. But I love my story, and thinking about how long it took me to get into the UFC, and and to be able to ride that wave. I'm just understanding now that it's just that dedication of time. And so if I want to be great at this next chapter, I have to dedicate my time to that. If I want to be a great analyst, if I want to be a great actor, I have to dedicate just as much time to that as I did in fighting.
Yeah, for sure. It all makes sense. And I think the word you described yourself there is, Michelle, is a pioneer of women's MMA. No doubt what you've done in the sport, for sure. But you see how much it's grown and stuff. And like you look at, as you kind of said there, someone like Misha Tate this past weekend, right? Like she's still hanging on till then, but you can tell she's like, you know, still trying to find that best side of herself. And maybe all the time off was too much or things like that. So
it's a very, very frustrating feeling. That's all I can say as a fighter. Like I know what she's feeling because you know how to perform at your best, and when it's not able to come out when it counts, it's frustrating. And it's one of those things, it's like you want to keep chipping away at it until you do reach the top of the mountain, until you do reach your goal. And in fighting, it's harder to do because it's not just dependent on your effort. Right? Because like your effort can take you to the top, but now you have to fight somebody that's just as dedicated and willing and motivated to get to the top. And then you have all sorts of other obstacles and factors, like, you know, the weight cut, the audience. It's crazy. And so I think Misha, I love her, outlook on it, as far as, you know, she's doing what she loves and she's going to continue to push the pace. She's going to continue to try to grow and evolve, and, you know, she's going to step in there and give it her all, and whatever happens, happens.
Yeah. Last thing on kind of this topic, but you look at the current crop of UFC champions right now, right? And they always say like fighting is a young man or young woman's game to a degree. There's not a UFC champion currently under 30 years old. And, you know, if that could change this weekend with Jack Del Maddalena and Manon Fiorot if they win. But like, do you think we need to actually, I think Manon's like 33, but nevertheless, do you think people need to like adjust what they think is the window of a MMA fighter's prime compared to like what it used to be, right? They used to say it's like 28 to 33, but you see all these champions winning belts at 35, 36, 37. Do you think we maybe have the wrong mindset of what an MMA fighter's prime is compared to what we knew through boxing and other things like that?
That's one of the things that frustrates me too. It just frustrates me that people look at stats and want to put fighters in a box. Like, you know, we're all individual, and our stories, you know, tell a different story. And, you know, somebody's 33 might be another's 40, you know. Yeah. So it depends on your style. It depends on how long you've been fighting. It depends on, you know, how much damage you've taken over your career. It depends on how much weight you cut. There's just so many things that go into it. I just don't think that age should be a factor, in my opinion. But I know that stat always gets thrown out. And so I don't know. It's just frustrating for me that people look that deeply into like, oh, is creeping up in age. Da, 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 da.
Yeah, no, you're completely right. Everyone has their own barometer in the sport. I mean, look at Randy Couture and Daniel Cormier. Like, they didn't start till their early 30s and became, you know, some of the greatest fighters ever. So yeah. Everyone can do it. Just kind of depends.
Right. And, you know, we were talking about that behind the desk this weekend. And I know that, you know, with USADA getting involved and them doing a lot more of the drug testing, that has a lot to do with it because, you know, your body can only do so much. We have amazing, beautiful, strong minds, but, you know, you can want to do something so passionately and your body's like, no, you're not doing that. And so, you know, with the USADA and us having to be clean fighters, it really makes the sport very pure, and you kind of just see the rawness of what the human body can do.
Yeah, I think we're coming up on next year. It'll be 10 years since they signed that deal, July 2015 when they did that deal. So maybe it's right around now. Obviously, we don't need to go too deep into it, name names or anything. But did you notice a legitimate change in the sport and what things were going on behind the scenes when that happened in 2015?
Honestly, I never really paid attention to that. It's not something that I ever felt that I needed to do. I always felt like if a fighter felt like they need to lean into that, it's because they had some not mental issues, but they felt like they needed to get that edge. And I always felt like if I ever did something like that I wouldn't be able to live with myself. I would feel like I was cheating. I would feel like I wasn't it wasn't me that did the work. It was something else. And so I never even went into that. And so it was just one of those things I didn't want to pay attention to. If I had opponents that were, you know, doing it or whatever, I never wanted it to be a reason that or something that I thought about when I was preparing for them or anything like that. It was just whatever, you know, that's out of my control. I'm not putting it in my body. So, you know.
Yeah, at the end of the day, you want to walk away from this thing with a clean conscience, right? So that's the peaceful way to do it. But you mentioned, you know, working on the desk. You've been awesome, Michelle, since transitioning. I know you did one in the Fox era, right? Was that back?
I did a couple in the Fox
era. Yeah. But yeah, you're back doing it consistently now. I think you've been great. I guess just like tell me how that being and that transition's been so far to kind of working behind the desk.
I think the hardest part for me is when I talk about fights, I'm usually talking about fights with my friends and with my sure. teammates. And so it's not as PG, sure, yeah, you know? Okay. And so trying to kind of like clean that up and tighten that up is hard for me. And then also it's hard for me to cast judgment or you know, analyze a fighter before I get to see them fight, because I, you know, that was something that I always hated as a fighter, seeing other people that weren't stepping into the octagon judge me and tell me what I was going to do stepping into the octagon. Like, you don't know what I'm going to do. You're not with me when I'm training. And a lot of times when the fighters do interviews, they're not, you know, whatever they're doing, if it's 100% of what they're doing, they're probably telling the reporter, the journalist, 20% of what they're doing, yeah. you know, so they're just kind of like making their own stories up based off of statistics. And I never wanted to like box a fighter into what their capacity was in a statistic. And that's what I have to do, right? It's just, we have to analyze the fighter off of what we see. And so wrapping my head around that and just trying to do it in a way where I'm not disrespecting any of the fighters, and I'm just more kind of enjoying both fighters and their strengths, and trying to kind of try to break down the fight in a way where it's the most respectful to both fighters.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I mean, everyone up there has their own style and their approach and how they're doing it. And of course, like they like what you're doing or they wouldn't have you up there, but I guess, how do you find that balance and striking everything you just said there, but also trying to bring something thoughtful or meaningful or whatever to the broadcast?
Well, you know, I think just as a female fighter, I look at fights differently. Growing up with the karate background and then being able to be with one camp for my entire MMA career with Coach Jackson and Coach Winklejohn, I think the way that I look at fights is a little different. I'm more of a conceptual person. Like if it works in one space, it can work in another space. And that's hard too, because it can kind of be broad, and I understand it as a fighter, but maybe not the everyday person understands that. And so just trying to really pick out one thing that I see from the fighter and explain it to the general public. I think that way I'm not giving them too much information, because in my mind, it's not too much information, but it might be too much information for somebody else. And I'm a talker, so just trying to figure out how to hit that point and stick to it.
Is it trickier doing a broadcast like you had this past weekend where you're in the Apex and the event is not there, or does the energy kind of feel the same even if it's not there?
Well, the Apex, you know, is kind of a smaller venue anyways. Mm-hmm. And, you know, when we are doing the pre-show, there's nobody there. When we are even at the Apex, when we're watching the fights, it's a smaller venue. And then halfway through, we go back to the studio anyways and watch the fights on monitor. So I don't think it's any different. Honestly, the biggest thing is building a relationship with the other broadcasters and kind of finding my own style as an analyst.
Yeah. Is there someone that you worked on the desk with that's been like, that you thought you've had very good chemistry with more so than anyone else, or that has given you a very helpful piece of advice or guided you in the right direction?
Everybody's been so helpful. Yeah. You know, when back in the day when I was working with Fox, KB was like very helpful. Mm-hmm. You know, I work with KB, I work with DC, I work with Rashad. I've worked with all of them, Bisbing. Just recently, though, I think Kiesa has been a great tool and somebody that I can kind of reach out to, and Paul Felder, because they understand what it is. They understand the nerves, and they're fighters, right? So when I'm talking to them, I'm like, man, this is the point I'm trying to get across, and I can't get it across. They're just like, just stick to one idea. You know, tell us why you like that idea. You know, don't just say it. Just tell us why that idea is a good idea. So, Felder and Kiesa have been really key in helping me, like, kind of build my confidence. And honestly, I'm blessed, and everybody's been very helpful. And every time I do it, I get more comfortable, because it's not just talking about the fight, right? It's figuring out where to look at the camera. You have somebody in your ear, and it's figuring out the cadence. And the rhythm. So it's a lot.
Yeah, for sure. And I guess, I know you said you want to keep it positive and, you know, introduce those kind of thoughts and ideas. But when you have a situation, we can kind of go into this now, like we had on Saturday with Bo Nickel, like the super hype prospect, everyone's talking, going to be so great. And they suffers a loss like that to Rainier de Ritter, and seemingly the entire MMA community is just like waiting for the opportunity to jump on this guy and kick him while he's down. what do you take away from a result like that? I guess let's start on the Bo side with, everything he had been saying about his potential greatness, and then having a loss like this.
Well, you know, as a fighter, you should be feeling that way. You know, it's hard to go into a fight without that confidence, because if you're beating yourself up before you walk into the octagon, then, you know, what are you doing? You should have that championship mentality, and that's why he's gotten where he is, you know. But MMA is a different sport than wrestling is. And he is taking the time to try to become an MMA fighter, but it's so I always tell people, when you get into MMA, you get very good very fast. But then when you get to the upper echelons of fighters and caliber of opponents, the increments of how good you get is very, very small. Mm-hmm. And a lot of times you don't see that. And so it can be like it can give you a false sense of confidence, kind of like beginner's luck when you start gambling, like this false sense of confidence that you're like just kicking everybody's butt, you know, and then you start to kind of get a real sense of the competition. And that's all it was this Saturday, is just like understanding, like, oh, dang, I still have more to learn. Because in his last fight before this, he, you know, he didn't take it to the ground. He wanted to work his stand up, and he was successful at it. You know, you could still see where he's learning, and he's still kind of like overreaching and stuff. But, you know, he took a chance, he took a risk, and decided to keep it standing so that he could get more octagon time. And, you know, I tip my hat off to that, because anybody, you could go in there and know, understand your strengths and just kind of finish the fight faster. But he wanted that octagon time. So, I don't fault him for it. MMA is a tricky sport, and it's not wrestling in its professional capacity is not the same as wrestling in MMA. Just like MMA jiu-jitsu is not the same as no-gi jiu-jitsu or gi jiu-jitsu, you know, and the same across the board with Muay Thai boxing. You can't do the same boxing combo in a boxing fight that you do in an MMA fight, because you're so vulnerable in other things, like the takedown, like the leg kicks, like the cage. There's so many things to think about it, and that's just going to expose him to the things that he needs to work on.
For sure. And I totally agree on the confidence side. Like, every fighter should have, you know, that self-belief. And, you know, when it goes to the next level and you see someone like a Conor McGregor and Ian Garry or something, like, if it works out, it can be very much part of your thing. I guess the thing that rubbed people the wrong way with Bo is him having like four MMA fights and being like, I'm going to be a -800 favorite over there, whoever the champion is, when I fight for the belt. And I guess you just hadn't proven that yet. But if, you know, you saw Mike Brown this morning, his head coach at American Top Team, he posted like a statement about the loss. And my biggest takeaway from it was like, he wants Bo to be more active, and like, we can do all the stuff in the gym, but nothing replicates the experience of the fight. If you were, I guess, like on his team, whatever, would you advise him like get back in there as soon as possible and try to rebound that, assuming he doesn't have any serious injuries or stuff like that?
I would 100%. You know, the more you, it's just like anything else in life, the more you do it, the more comfortable you become with it. And if you don't have anything else, you know, holding you back, you know, kids, another job, injuries, you know, then why not? You know, now is your time. Take advantage of that time and try to get as much octagon experience, octagon time as possible.
For sure. And for the people out there hating on Bo, go look at the records of like every UFC champion right now, see what they were doing in their eighth fight. Not some, most of them weren't even in the UFC right now.
So. That's what I'm saying. Like it's, people can, people are going to talk, you know, that's why we have the athletes that are, you know, in the arena, and then we have the spectators. So. Yeah. You know, they're doing their job and we're doing ours.
Yeah, for sure. And on the other side with Renier de Ritter, very impressive UFC start, 3-0, three finishes, former two division champion in one. Does he strike you as a guy that could be, you know, top five middleweight championship potential? He called out Sean Strickland. Don't know if that's going to happen, but I could see him getting like a Whitaker, Cannonier, one of those guys who's in like the top six.
I think the call out was a great call out. You know, yeah. he said it great. You know, he's talking about the wrestling. Now he wants to take out the striker. It was a great move on his end. And if we're going back to the fight between him and Bo Nickel, I feel like hats off to him for not listening to what everybody else was saying and all the hype that was coming out, you know, about Bo Nickel. And because sometimes when there's so much hype behind a fighter, you can let that, you know, plant a seed in your head, and then you go out into the fight defeated before you even get to feel them, before you even get to move with them. So hats off to him for being confident in himself and his skills and his abilities to take that W. And yeah, with that being said, like you're saying, I'm not sure like Strickland right off the bat, especially because I think it was a perfect fight for him and Bo Nickel, to be honest with you, so that we could see, you know, where they're at in the division and who they're going to fight moving forward.
Yeah, we'll see. I feel confident Renier de Ritter is not going to get another fight against someone with seven MMA fights again, though. So it's will be interesting. And then just the main event, Corey Sandhagen. We don't need to get too much into the finish. I know he feels that was not accidental, but he wants this title shot. He wants the winner of Merab and Sean O'Malley, a fight at UFC 316. Was that performance enough to get the title shot? Or Piotr Jan is out here this morning saying, you know, I either want the shot before you or fight me for number one contender.
I like all those ideas. Yeah. I mean, I'm not going to complain about either one. I do think that he is deserving of a title shot, especially seeing that performance. I think he was laser focused in there. I think that, you know, he showed the world that he's a complete MMA fighter. The thing that kind of worried me about him going into this fight is when he fought Umar, I feel like he kind of robbed himself of his wrestling. I didn't see him utilize his wrestling as much as I wanted to. And I mean, I'm guilty of it myself. When I fought Carla Esparza, instead of using my own wrestling and putting her on her back, I was completely defensive fighting her. And, you know, the results showed in itself. You know, I lost a split decision, even though I think I won that fight. Mm-hmm. Because I took away one of my tools for no reason, right? And so I think he went back to the drawing boards and was like, why am I taking away my tools? I'm an amazing wrestler. I'm an amazing grappler. I'm amazing. You know, he's amazing everywhere. So he just needed to show the world that that's what he did. And just his confidence going into the fight and his mentality switch, I think, is what shows that he's ready to fight for that belt. Because, you know, he said it himself on the mic, champions don't change the way they fight. You know, the people that fight them change their styles. And I love that mentality.
Yeah, it's an interesting fight between him and Sean or Umar, and he hasn't fought either of those guys. So we'll see what happens here. That event, obviously, a month away now, but mm-hmm. An event that's a week away or less than a week, Michelle, is UFC 315 this weekend in Montreal. I'm wearing my Canadian jersey here to rep the home country here. But in the main event, welterweight title, Bilal Muhammad and Jack Della Maddalena. I guess, like, I wrote down a couple storylines to watch from some of the top fights on here. My top one for this main event is, I guess, how is Bilal Muhammad going to fight? Because he's saying in these interviews, I'm not shooting any takedowns. Jack's going to get the Canelo hands. I don't know. Like, do you buy into this, or can you not envision a Bilal Muhammad performance with no grappling involved?
It's kind of hard to envision, because Bilal is not the type of fighter to take risks and switch it up just because he wants to, especially as a champion. Like, that's high risk. You know, like, you want to be the reigning champion. You want to be able to defend that belt. And I just think, like, habitually, as fighters, we do try to switch it up so that we can cater to one opponent or another, but eventually we revert back to what we're comfortable with because we know what it take, what we have to do in order to win. And how I see Bilal winning is in the grappling exchanges, is in his, you know, in his clinch work up against the cage, and right there, in that wedge between the cage and the ground. That's where I see him winning. So I don't know, maybe he's trying to bait JDM into getting into like a slugfest so that it's easy for him to, you know, change levels and close the distance on him and take him up against the cage. But who knows?
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, Bilal is he talks a lot. He usually backs it up, and you know, to when people are critical of, you know, I guess your fighting style sometimes, to make a statement like that, you're kind of setting yourself up to get booed if you do a grappling heavy performance. But we'll see what happens on Saturday.
But also, like, Bilal's good at just doing whatever it takes to win.
For sure, he's been great.
So he don't care if he gets booed. He's like, whatever, I'm the champ.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, I guess on Jackson too, like, my biggest question mark on him is just, this seems like a lot, right? Like, two big surgeries he had. This is the longest layoff of his career coming in. He wasn't the expected guy, but timing worked out great in his favor. And it's about as far as he can travel across the world from Perth, Australia. So like, it just seems like a lot on the plate for this type of opportunity. Do you factor any of that stuff in, or do you just look at what he can do in the fight skill for skill?
Well, before you jump to Jack, I do want to touch on something with Bilal, because Bilal's training with one of my old striking coaches, Mike Valley, and he's amazing, an amazing striking coach. So who knows, maybe Mike Valley has been working on some striking combinations or some things that
the striking looked great against Leon. Like, he definitely 100%. Surprised him.
Mm-hmm. So who knows, because, you know, we're all constantly evolving and growing. And, you know, when you learn something really cool inside of training and you want to show the world, that's the funnest part, right? It's like, okay, I did it in training. Let's see if I can do it under the lights when it counts. So that's very cool, like, thing to think about. And with JDM, I think that people react differently to people react differently to situations, right? For me, I was always the type of person that would rise to the occasion. If I was given an opportunity, you know, that's kind of the storyline of when I fought Paige VanZant. I was out for a year and a half. I just got signed to the UFC. I broke my hand, and then I broke it again, and then I broke it again. And it was kind of, was like down on my luck coming off an injury, hadn't fought in over a year. And then here I come with this great opportunity to fight Paige VanZant for the main event and first time in Sacramento. And for me, I was motivated by that opportunity and I wanted to rise to the occasion. And so that's exactly what is happening here with JDM. He has this huge opportunity in his hands and hopefully he takes full advantage of it.
Yeah. Who would be the most intriguing next contender for you after this? Islam Makhachev moving up, Ian Gary, who's the backup, Sean Brady, who's got some big wins. Joachim Buckley is fighting Kamaru Usman. There's a lot going on here. Shavkat's out there as well.
I like the idea of Islam or even Ian. I like that storyline of Ian kind of being ready for it in a two. Like, I just, like, fighters are crazy. I'm just like, you guys are crazy. Am I that crazy? Probably.
You have been. Yeah, no, there's a lot of interesting ones there. Quickly, because I know we only got a few minutes left. Co-main event, huge one for Valentina Shevchenko, trying to start the second reign after putting that Alexa Grasso chapter behind her. But Manon's been on a great run in the UFC, undefeated here. What are your kind of thoughts on this? Do you see this as the biggest threat to Valentina right now?
I don't know if I don't think I've seen enough of Manon kind of think it's the biggest threat. But to be honest with you, I think that, you know, Shevchenko has just been up against the best of the best in the entire division and up a weight class, you know. So I think the biggest threat that Manon has to offer is her speed. And so her speed and her youth, right? So she's fast, but I don't think that Shevchenko hasn't been up against girls that are fast. I feel like Rose is very fast in a different way. She's kind of more of a sniper, whereas Manon is more of kind of like volume. But with that being said, I feel like Shevchenko, again, just like Bilal, knows how to win. And Shevchenko has super heavy hips. She's gonna let Manon come in. I feel like Shevchenko's gonna secure the win. She's going to drop in. And I just think Shevchenko is a little bit more well-rounded when it comes to MMA and super heavy top pressure. And if she has to, she'll get it there. And I do think that she's motivated because she feels like Manal is like insincere in where she sits as far as like the type of fighter she is. She doesn't know if she's like a respectful fighter or she's like a talking shit kind of fighter. So I do think it kind of pisses pisses Shevchenko off a little bit. So I like the idea of Alexa Grasso and Silva being on the card. Yeah. So it's kind of like, you know, like a 125 tournament where it's like, who wins off of this one can get maybe get the next shot of it. A lot of people are saying they don't want to see Shevchenko fight Grasso for a fourth time. I like the idea of Shevchenko maybe fighting Wei Li.
Yep.
So you know, there's a lot of opportunity for things to be shaken up, even though some people might not see it that way.
Last thing on UFC 315. What are your just thoughts on where Jose Aldo is at this stage of his career? Like, he retired, he came back. The matchmaking, I think, in the eyes of some people is being a little weird. We haven't got like any of those legends fights we wanted him. They're throwing him younger guys or prospects, so to speak, on streaks. This one will be cool because he's the Hall of Famer. George St. Pierre will be in Eamon Zahabi's corner, so it'll be a little Hall of Fame versus Hall of Fame thing there. But I don't know. What do you make of Jose at this stage?
I mean, I'm a huge fan of Jose Aldo. I think that he's been like an icon for me. I've really like looked up to his style. I getting into the MMA scene. So I'm excited to see him work. I do still think he has what it takes to put on an amazing performance. I'm always like, I think just as a fan, I want to see a good fight. You know, so I'm excited that he's on the card and I'm excited to see him fight.
For sure. It'll be a great one. And just last thing I wanted to ask you about here, Michelle, obviously for people who may not recognize you from the MMA world, I don't know who that would be that's watching this, but they also may have seen you on Netflix on Havoc. You did an amazing job there. Just tell me, like, how long ago was that filmed? When did that come together? And now what's it been like that the world gets to see you on this big platform showing a different side of yourself?
It's been a long time coming. We filmed that in probably 4 years ago during COVID.
Oh, wow. Okay.
I lived in Wales for about 4 years, or not 4 years, for about 6 months. I lived in Wales shooting that movie, and it was an amazing experience. Gareth Evan is an amazing action director. He's the director that filmed The Raid, Raid 2. And then, of course, like Tom Hardy, he's, when it comes to like MMA films, I think he's been able to been the one to be able to pull off it the most sincere. And he's just a sincere guy, and he's a huge jiu-jitsu practitioner himself, so anytime we had the opportunity to go train, we were rolling, and so that made it a lot easier for our fight scene because we understood each other's body language and stuff like that. But my character in the movie is badass.
Yeah,
he's super cool. She's a villain. And so it's fun for me because in real life, I'm not like, I'm, you know, even in fighting, I was always just, you know, I went out there to fight and, you know, I had an objective. And definitely I'm a warrior, I'm a fighter, but I was never the bad guy. So it was fun to play the bad guy.
Yes. No, one of the kindest people in MMA, Michelle. And I guess, like you said, 4 years ago, waiting for this to come out, I'm sure it's part of your resume. You can shop it around. Has this led to anything yet in terms of, you know, the acting side and more things we could see you in the future?
Yeah, 100%. You know, it's just taken off, and, you know, we're going to hit the ground running. So if you haven't watched it yet, it's on Havoc, or it's on Netflix. The movie's called Havoc. It's number one for probably the first 2 weeks. So we got to get back up to number one.
Yeah.
It's high action. And yeah, I've been getting a lot of calls. Really excited. There's a lot of projects coming out up here in the future. And I just want to show the world that, you know, because of my karate background, because of, you know, my theater background, I went to college for theater, and just being in the entertainment space and being in like the fight space. And I understand what it is to be in a real fight, and I understand what it is to be in a film fight. So there's a lot of opportunity, and I'm really excited to capitalize on it.
Love it. Well, you've been kicking ass, Michelle. It's been great to see you. You're one of the people I had no doubt that the transition into post-fighting life would go well. And I know those things kind of nag at you a little bit. It'll probably be there forever, but you know, you're killing it. So just keep going. And I appreciate you being here. I've wanted to have you on for a few weeks here, and hopefully this is the first of many appearances as you become one of the UFC's prominent analysts here. So thank you so much for being here.
100%. Thank you for having me.
All right, I'm going to take a quick break and wrap things up. And thank you, Michelle. That does it for another episode of the Bonfire Podcast. Thank you so much to Michelle for her time, for joining the show here and giving a little bit of insight in her post-active competition life. As I said there to her, I think she is very well primed to thrive in this area. And I think we're going to see a lot more of her on UFC broadcast, a lot more of her on television, on movies, streaming platforms, whatever it may be. It seems like she is really finding her way. So we are happy for her in that regard here and very much appreciate her insight on all the things we discussed there. I thought it was great, and hopefully we get Michelle back on here many more times in the future as she flourishes in that UFC analyst role. I will be off on Tuesday to Montreal for UFC 315. A little insight on the fight week schedule. Wednesday, a media day, 14 fighters will be there, the full main card, some prelim fighters as well. Thursday, the pre-fight press conference, in which the entire main card will attend. Friday morning, official weigh-ins. Friday afternoon, we have a Q&A with a bunch of notable Canadian fighters: George St. Pierre, Patrick Cote, Rory McDonald, Valerie Letourneau. We'll all be taking questions from fans. That should be a cool scene to kind of highlight the past generation of Canadian mixed martial arts. And then, of course, Friday evening as well, UFC 315 ceremonial weigh-ins and face-offs, and then we go into fight night on Saturday. I will be there for MMA Junkie, covering it all at the solo mission this time, but I'm sure, you know, all the media friends will be up there, and we will provide some good content for you, maybe on this channel a little bit here on The Bonfire, but most certainly plenty over on MMA Junkie. So follow it all. Make sure you're following me on social media, at Mike Bon on X, at Mike Bon MMA on Instagram, and then you can search for it on the other platforms if you are interested. Once again, please show your support with a likes, subscription, comment, whatever it may be. Big shout out to my man Kamikaze Abu Suban for producing the show as always, and hope everyone enjoys this fight week. And until next week, I will see you back here by The Bonfire.